Hey folks, you're listening to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, episode 78. And today I have another instant classic. This is by Chief Andy Starnes. And I'm telling you, Chief Andy, when you listen to this, you'll hear him sharing his vulnerabilities and accountabilities regarding his priorities in life, which are his faith, his family, and his career. Now, if you are a parent, get ready to be inspired as the chief shares his conviction of being physically and mentally present for his loving family. I'm telling you, his words are timeless principles that might positively affect the lives of people for generations. Chief Andy Starnes.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you, I'm excited that the Get Balanced Podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit FirstNet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. Today is Battalion Chief Andy Starnes from a very large department in North Carolina. He is also the founder at Insight Fire Training, and we will get into some of those details. But he is a busy man, but also one of the things that I love when I have gotten to know Andy over the last year or so is that he's a follower of Christ, he's a father, he's a husband, and he wears many hats. So couldn't wait to have him on the show. And Andy, I know you're here, so welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Donnie. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. And Andy, if you would, just jump right into it a little bit. Talk about your work, all that, you know, the hats you wear as a firefighter, as well as a business owner, trainer, instructor, author. Yeah, give us a little background, if you would.
Well, first of all, I didn't start off pursuing any of this stuff. I'd say the good Lord directed my path into those, because I don't want to give myself credit for those things. But basically, I started chasing my dad around since I was 8 years old. He would come home from working at the full-time job he had, and he would go to the volunteer fire department. So that's how I got into it. Was I went to the volunteer fire department to hang out with him. We'll talk more about how that leads into this later. But basically, that's how I got my interest in the fire department. And yeah, Originally I grew up playing with jet planes and wanted to be a fighter pilot. And then I took the SAT and got an 800 on it and realized you get 400 points for your name. Maybe this fire department gig's not a bad idea. So, you know, so I started going to school and was hired in 1998, and it'd be my 21 years, something like that. With career, and I've been in it since I was 16 years old, and been blessed to work with some really smart people and pray that it rubs off. And then my father started an applied science project back in 2010 to help volunteers, And I used it as an opportunity or excuse to hang out with him. And I always like to say my fire department trained me, but my dad's organization known as Project Kill the Flashover educated me. I got to hang around with people from all over the world. And it was wow. such a huge blessing for me because these people were coming in and giving their time. It wasn't a financial thing. They wanted to make things better and share their expertise. There was no ego. It was all about learning. And that's how I got into thermal imaging. And in that process, somewhere in there, I got promoted to captain. And this is where we'll talk more about that today. But I found out the other side of the fire service in that time frame, which was what people don't talk about, which is the dark side or the other side of leadership. I would go to work and be a Mr. Firefighter and come home and have anxiety attacks and blow up on my wife and my one-year-old daughter. And my wife politely informed me one day. She said, I thought you said this is the greatest job in the world. I said, it is. And she said, well, I'm telling you, you're coming home and you're taking it out on me and her. She don't deserve it. And she pointed a stack of journals that I've been writing. There's this whole bookcase full of them back here. And she said, you say firefighters are hurting. You're writing about it. Nobody's reading them. What are you doing about it? She turned around and walked out of the room. With all 10 toes broken, I went to a pastor, a counselor, and a doctor. And been there ever since in a position of accountability. And I fell into behavioral health, fell into my own. Out of brokenness, I figured out there's two things you can do. The fire service can be a spiritual detriment or it can be an opportunity. And I was letting it be a detriment and I was ready to give up and realize that's not what we're supposed to do. And started another ministry called Bringing Back Brotherhood, where I basically just started writing out of my own pain, frustrations, and brokenness. And we've reached approximately about 1 million viewers each year, just in basically parable formats. And that's how I got into behavioral health. And that's how, when I started teaching, everywhere I go, I teach about thermal imaging. The first minute I would talk about suicide, marital issues, PTSD, and say, if you want to learn about what I'm going to teach you today, but you're not right here, your head and your heart, there's nothing I can do for you. And I said, because 234 firefighters, police, and EMS killed themselves 2 years ago. And I said, who's the first line of defense against that? You and me. And if you got the courage to run into a burning building, but don't have the courage or decency to sit down and have a cup of coffee and shut up and listen and lift up, you don't have to be a trained counselor because they all want to talk to you first. No offense, before they talk to you, Dr. Donnie. Mm-hmm. Because the firefighter can relate. It's empathy, right?
Yeah.
And everywhere I go, somebody meets me for dinner or calls me up and says, hey, I was thinking about suicide or my marriage is falling apart. And I appreciate what you said, whether it's about your faith, about almost losing your family. Because I think by being vulnerable and open, instead of pouting and pounding your chest like a lot of firefighters do, people see the real side of you, which is what everybody sees, a Facebook side of you. They don't see the side where you struggle, you have pain, you have frustrations, you have the stuff that real people have. The Jerry Springer side of life, I like to say. Everybody has that. It's normal to have problems. It's not normal not to deal with them. And that's how I got into that. And I fell into thermal imaging, literally fell into it by helping my dad and hanging a piece of sheetrock, fell through a floor, ripped my knee in half, and was almost disabled. And my wife politely informed me again. Notice two times my life has changed. Good Lord and my wife, discernment, right?
Yeah.
she politely informed me. She said, we can't live without you or 18% disability, which is what I was going to get. I had no intention of founding Insight Fire Training. She said, go get insurance, make it legal if you're going to leave the house. So I did it. And while I was laid up, I went to school and realized, just like you, when you went to school for your profession, you have to have a piece of paper that says you know what you're doing. It's a credentialing process. There's a difference between certification and qualification. But they certify you saying you've passed a written standard. Well, in the fire service, to work in thermal imaging, you have to have 0 hours of training. Where in industry, you have to have a minimum of 32 hours of training. And I like to compare it to this. When you get married and you become a husband or a dad, what's the requirement on training on that? 0.
Right.
What did you have, though? And that's how this happened. And then fast forward to where we are now, we've been to almost all 50 states, 9 countries, and we taught 20 countries online last year. We taught over 10,000 students virtually, and we taught a few thousand in person, and I am blessed to work with some really great, passionate guys that my organization requires a values test to work with me. It's kind of like my friend Cody Treschel from Brothers in Battle. He believes in a values system first, then a skill set second. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed to hang out with those guys, and they hold me accountable. We encourage each other, and that's the short version. I'm married. I'll be 15 years married this year. She's been putting up with me, and we have a 10-year-old beautiful little daughter who's about to be 11 in the preteen years, Miss Emma. And her name is short for Emmaus, which means the road or journey. And she can tell you more about that in her own little interview. She can talk more than me. She gets it honest. That's it.
All right. I appreciate the great overview. Mm-hmm. Andy, you talked about when you first got into it in the leadership position. Mm-hmm. And the struggles, the dark, I think did you call it the dark side of leadership? Did I take that?
Sure.
Yep. Is that, what happened? I mean, how did you address that? You know,
I had a naive view of it. I had some really good people in my life for leadership positions to look up to. I don't know about you, but I did the same thing a lot of young people do. I looked at the good side of them and all their successes, but I never paid attention to when they stepped aside and whispered in somebody's ear, or they stepped in another room and shut the door, and why they shut the door, or when they disappeared for a week or two, why they did. I never saw the other side of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I got into the position, then I sought those people out who I should have listened to before, which was, you know, my dad, Alan Brunicini, lots of others. And hang on one second. You want to be on the podcast, baby? Come over here and say hey to Dr. Donnie. This is my little girl, not so little anymore.
And this is Emma, right?
Yeah.
Hi, Emma.
She's an early riser, as you can tell.
That's good. Hi. Hey, tell me a couple favorite things about your dad. What do you love about your dad the most?
Well, that he's silly and he will always do anything for me. And that I love him and he loves me.
That is perfect.
Silly part.
Probably. And also he brings me muffins from Hannah's Coffee.
Yeah, I do that.
That is my youngest daughter's name, Hannah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And
I'm going to talk to Dr. Donnie, okay?
Love you, Dad.
Love you, too. My door is always open, as you see.
I love that. And
your teacher, she came in.
I noticed how she said goodbye. I noticed how she said goodbye to you.
Mm-hmm. Always yep. does.
That's a learned skill, right?
Yes, sir. Man, etiquette, yes, sir.
Yeah.
We're big on that here. I believe in respecting everybody, and you can't earn respect unless you give it. So we teach her some things I was taught, you know, long time ago, obviously, but you've got to treat people the way you want to be treated and try to show her that in the way I treat her mother and treat everybody else. And especially I tell her it's really hard when you don't feel like it, you know.
Yeah.
Great day.
Yeah. But yeah.
She's a blessing, and she's a lesson in accountability for me too.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Take me back for our listeners. Is that, you know, those times when this work life, if you'd call it imbalance, right? Because I talk about that so much in my work, in my workshops, is about, you know, as most first responders, you know, it's those struggles that we have on the job and the things like that. And we bring them home. And, you know, fortunately, your wife quickly pointed that out to you. And then you said you went and talked to, I think, a pastor, a doctor, you know, you sought help. But what did it take you very long to realize that, you know, hey, this is my wake up call? Or what was that period of time like? And what went through your mind, as in what gave you that push to actually reach out to others and ask for some help?
Well, I guess you have to understand too that my dad had been divorced I was 17, and I witnessed all of that and what that did to my family. And then at that point in our marriage, I had seen enough firefighters get divorced, and we had just had a walk where she and I used to walk all the time. And I was telling her how I was shocked that a particular individual that I trusted cheated on his wife. And she turned and looked at me and said, "All men do it. It's only a matter of time before you do it to me."
Mm.
And here's why. Been married 3-4 years at that point. And what I didn't know is I hadn't earned her trust, because when I went to work, I behaved completely different than I did at home. Played the fireman role, where you've got the bad language and heavy drinking and looking at things you shouldn't look at and doing all the things some of us have done, and come home and try to be a good godly husband. Well, as the Bible says, you can't be a double-minded man. And that's what I was. And I was struggling with that. And that's why I was coming home, because she viewed that that other guy was going to win out. And the wake-up call for me was, when she said that, was I've had friends who didn't get this wake-up call.
Yeah.
They came home to an empty house, and their house was in foreclosure. So I viewed it as a blessing. Yeah, it was a humbling moment, absolutely. But you got to realize, I had been doing that for 3 years before I listened, too. It wasn't like I did it one time and she said, "Hey, you know, you need to straighten up." No, I had been, you know, as my uncle used to say, you pound on a tough piece of meat long enough, it becomes tender. You know, I had been being pounded on, and I was turning around and taking it out on them.
Yeah.
Which is always like to say, you know, we'll be nicer to a perfect stranger if they ask for directions than we will our own family, because we think our family knows better. You know, tell them perfect little directions, but you tell your family, just go down here and turn left at the tree. We have to realize that, you know, I made a commitment to my wife and my daughter first. Firefighters get very hung up in the commitment to the job and throw away the commitment to their family in the process. And they should realize that those two go hand in hand. If you are very dedicated and committed as a husband and a father, or a wife and a mother, then you'll be even more dedicated as a firefighter. It's not contradictory. It's when you get them out of balance, and as Rick Lasky says, you put your fire department family over your real family. And what you end up doing is retiring from the fire department and living in a shoebox apartment and drinking a fifth of liquor every day alone.
Yeah.
And that's not your point in life, to end up alone and throw away your pension and your family. The greatest save you'll ever made, doctor, is your family, not somebody in a burning building. And that for me was, okay, do I want to go through a divorce? Do I want to do to my daughter what I saw done to me, what I've seen done when I went into broken homes? No, I don't want to do that. Did it hurt? Yeah. But I know more firemen who are firefighters who won't go get help because of pride. They don't want anybody to know. They don't think they need help, and they only find out too late. I can't put your house out or save your house if you call me if it burned down to the foundation and then call the fire department.
Right.
There's nothing left to save. Just clean slate, start over. So I was thankful that she called me out while we still had something to say. You know, that's where, I mean, but yeah, it's a long process. And by the way, you can hang a thing around my neck says under construction. I'm nowhere near where I need to be.
Should we bring your wife into this conversation?
Yeah, she's in there. She'd gladly comment. She doesn't like being on camera.
Andy, talk to me about that change though. You know, so when you felt, you know, she brought it to your attention and you're bringing all these struggles home. How did you begin to make that change? How did you begin to start being nicer? You know, as you mentioned, like the strain, you know, as a stranger or something like that. But what was it inside of you to help motivate that change?
Well, I think it's good Lord convicting me, number one, because we wouldn't have a daughter if it wasn't for a change in our faith. Because you got to understand, when we got married, my wife said, "I never want to have children," because she'd been married before and she had a very, very bad experience. And I didn't know at the time she didn't trust me. You heard why.
Yeah.
And then later, when all this conviction starts, I start feeling bad about my behaviors. I start realizing I'm not who I say I am. I'm out of shape. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. you know, I go to a fire and one wearing one air pack, one bottle, and I'm exhausted. I'm like, man, you know, all these things you say you are and you're not, you know, like I said, the Facebook profile, perfect life, and you don't have the perfect life. Nobody does. That was already under, I was under what they call conviction. And I think that's the good Lord working on me. That's what my dad said anyway at that point. And then I started seeking out wise counsel. I started talking to people at church. I started talking to other firefighters I respected, not 3-year firefighters, but people who are about to retire, been around the block, PhD in life. My next door neighbor who had been married for 64 years and was a World War II vet. I talked to those people.
Yeah.
And I sought out their advice, and I just sat there and said, hey, tell this dummy what you think. And what I learned was, is, you know, you can't be two people. You will always be in conflict. And eventually one will win. And my wife was betting that the bad guy at work was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be who I say. Now, am I 100% who I say I am? No, I fail every day. I'm a flawed piece of dirt the good Lord picked up and washed off. For some reason, I have a wonderful wife and a wonderful daughter and a life that I don't deserve. And I look at that every day and say, I have this. I should be thankful for that. People are praying for the problems I have.
Yeah.
Well, for me to realize that, and when I started going through that process, it was convicting. It's not easy. People think, oh, well, you change. No, you don't just flip a switch and change. You ask an alcoholic how they get into sobriety. It's a daily battle. You ask anybody who changes their marriage or changes their life, it's a daily battle. It's a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And thankfully, that woman in there is the one that keeps me accountable. She reminds me, if I stray too far and you start to drive into the other lane, you know, a car has these little sensors now that warns you.
Yeah.
He warns me, hey, you're getting out of balance. In marriage ministry, they call it love deposits and love withdrawals. You're never balanced. I know your title is get balanced, but you're never balanced. You're either overdrawn or over deposited. Yeah. My goal is to stay over deposited so that when I have a month of being overdrawn, that when I come back and say, okay, I had 3 weeks of working both jobs and haven't really been here.
Yeah.
What do I need to do to be here? Do I need to spend 8 hours in this office with the door shut while they're in the other room? No. I need to be plugged in to them, not to this thing that says how much screen time I got. Yeah, watch The Social Dilemma. That'll convict you. You know, I look at it differently. I look at the process differently. I look at it as it's an opportunity to change. As my neighbor said, you can choose. You can make a wise choice now or be made to make a desperate choice later. I would rather make that choice and say, I still have a marriage and a life and a child to have, to enter. And for me, that process has been a very humbling process. And if you really want to do it, it's like I told you about the marble analogy.
Yeah.
Every day, whether you realize it or not, those of you who like to save money or spend money, you got 86,400 seconds and you can't save a one of them. You have to spend them. How are you going to spend them? Am I going to spend them in front of this computer, typing and chatting with you and telling you how wonderful everything is while they're in there and things are not wonderful? And I'm going to do an hour in here. I'm going to get my stuff done. And we're going to spend all the time together on the way to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You have to balance that out. Because when she says, put your phone down and play with me, or I don't get to spend time with you, or you're always on the phone, or you never play with me, those things hurt. And they're true. Because a 10-year-old has no filter. She puts it right here. See the chink in the armor, right between the ribs. Pow! Right in there. You know, and you go, ow, that hurt.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for the rambling, but it's just marriage and family is one of the most important things you can have in life next to your faith. And the world has second placed it for the sake of career, for the sake of whatever, ambition, greed, success. But it means nothing if you have no one to share it with.
So true. So true. Andy, have you ever, I apologize for asking, because have you ever attended one of my workshops at any of the events?
No.
No.
Listened to you on your podcast and started following you online. Now, my wife and I have participated in, we've been to marriage ministry getaways. We've been and accountability groups and done things like this on boundaries, on work-life balance. And I've done my own studies with them and taught them at Fellowship Christian Firefighters about here's what I did wrong, here's what worked for us, here's what didn't work, you know. Then a clock formation where it shows one hand is your arm, one hand's the other, and you're controlling the clock, and that really doesn't feel good. I've been following you or slash stalking you online for a little while.
And I appreciate all your comments too out there, because it's you know, we all learn together. We all learn together and try to encourage each other to practice. And you know, my definition of work-life balance in my research, you know, a lot of my research is underneath the umbrella of self-care, you know, and that's sort of the underpinning of how do we get a balanced life. One thing is we got to make sure that, you know, we take care of ourselves, which in all aspects of our lives include, you know, and all of that. But I've always defined work-life balance as mostly in a question, are we aligning our day-to-day behaviors with our priorities in life? And you, and as you say, you know, it is the Get Balanced program. Getting balanced is not a destination, because balance ebbs and flows, you know, because our priorities change, you know, it can change any minute. And you know, it's just like we're recording a podcast right now, but if something critically would happen right at this moment for either one of us, our priorities shift.
Yeah. Be like, bye.
Yeah. Right. And it's the same way when we get working too much. Well, we have to do this, we have to do this. You know, it and you mentioned it earlier, is that no, it's all about choices. We choose. You know, we do get to choose our priorities, you know. And a lot of times we get people get and firefighters and other first responders, we get in that mode of we're running in this race of life. You know, either I don't like hearing when people are racing to retirement. You know, it's like, boy, we got to enjoy the journey. You know, we got to enjoy our time getting there. And so when I talk about, you know, are our day-to-day behaviors in alignment with our priorities in life, how do you discern and do you take time to reflect on how you're on your current priorities in life? You know, who and what is most important to you right now? And you ever check yourself on how's my behavior doing with those priorities?
Well, I think, you know, checks and balances are a big thing, because you're not, in my opinion, I'm not smart enough nor wise enough to constantly keep a gauge of where I'm at. So having wise counsel, having a discerning godly wife who calls me out or says, hey, put the brakes on, is one way. The other side is having what I call, Andy Andrews calls it a board of directors. I wrote something about it a few years ago, where you have a group of people from broad, diverse spectrums of life, like my neighbor who was married for 64 years, that you talk to on a regular basis. And you consult when you're facing those struggles. They may not be a licensed counselor, but they may have faced things that you've never faced, right? And those are the people that I call or talk to regularly. I had breakfast with one of them yesterday on the way home. He's a retired battalion chief, and I used to seek him out quite regularly until the corona stuff hit. We're just now trying to get caught back up. We call it coffee, Christianity, and cholesterol. We'd sit down and eat, you know. But that's the first thing, is because I'm not wise enough or smart enough just to have a system that keeps me in check every day. I'm not a Jocko Willink that 4:30, I'm out of the bed and I'm a machine. I'm not, you know, I am as inconsistent as I can be in certain behaviors, but the consistent part should be your values, your principles, and how do you keep those aligned? I think, honestly, if you don't have a solid, transcendent moral anchor that says where you stand and what you stand for, you're in trouble, because the world says truth can change based on the election, based on whoever, based on the book you read. I think it's hilarious that ethics has a revised edition. You know, why does ethics get revised? Why is truth relative? Why is it okay to be this kind of dad, this generation, and another kind of dad? No, you know, there are certain transcendent moral values that are 100% absolute truth. And the world doesn't want to hear that. There is good, there is evil. and there's a way to keep yourself in between and stay between the lines on the road. Just don't repaint the lines. When you write a book, Doctor, I don't have the right to read the book and define for you what you were trying to say. I can interpret it my way, but in the end, if that's not what you meant, you can correct me on it. Mm-hmm. The world says, no, Andy can tell the author what it means. And that's dangerous. It's foolish. It's reckless. And it's the cause of people getting astray, looking at Facebook and saying, well, their life is better than mine. I will get rid of my marriage. I don't need to take care of my kids. I can do these things. I can go. I can do whatever I want without any cost. No. There's a tremendous cost. And firefighters should know it better than anybody, because if you're busy and you run calls, you see broken homes. You see dissolved marriages. You see abusive relationships. You see overdoses, suicide, murders, the worst of humanity you see, and you come in and you bring a sense of normalcy back to a chaotic situation. You bring compassionate care to no matter who it is, no matter their race, their religion, their belief system, you treat them equally, and yet we go home and treat our family unequally. How hypocritical is that?
Right.
We go down the street and die in a burning building for someone we may not even know or may not even like, but then we would abandon our families at home. People may not like to hear this, but if you abandon your wife or your husband and your kids for the sake of another lifestyle or another person, not because of something terrible, but just because you want to pursue someone else, and then you want me to trust you with my life to follow you into a burning building or an ideal age immediately dangerous to life and health situation, I'm not following you. Because if you will abandon your spouse and your children, you sure as heck will abandon me.
Yeah.
Because you showed me what your priority is, which is you and you alone. So the badge and the uniform is nothing more than basically a way to say, look at me. When in reality, the badge and the uniform is a commitment to your sacrifice, to be a servant. And that's the first commitment you made when you got married. The first commitment you made when you had a kid was, I'm not first anymore. It's for them. But what about your spouse, your children? What do they get? How much of it? You talk about work-life balance. In a 30-year career, I'll spend 12 years away from my family. 12.
Yeah.
What am I going to miss in that? Thankfully, I got a wife that comes to the fire station. Thankfully, I have a wife that constantly calls, and we travel together and we do things. We try to soak up every single second. But to keep in checks and balances, you have to have people around you that are the same type of values that keep you in. If you have one that's running over here and doing things they shouldn't, you're going to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Dad says your environment will dictate your environment, as Robbie Zacharias says, your I environment inside of here. You hang around people who drink and cuss and do all that stuff all the time, you will drink and cuss eventually. But you will not bring them up, they will drag you down. Okay?
Right.
You have to have accountability. You have to have good firefighters around you to be a great firefighter. You have to have good husband role models around you to be a better husband. You know, those are the things that I've learned. I'm not smart enough or good enough to be a better person alone. Or Jesus wouldn't have had to die on a cross if I was good enough to get my way into heaven. He said, "You can't get there." You know, got to help this poor bald guy. You know, I need all the help I can get. You know, so that, I believe if you want to stay in the lanes of what your value system is, you better have a system of accountability and responsibility with people who keep you there. You know, you got to have that. That's just my firm belief. A group. Honestly, I have a group called Slack. I don't know if you use it. It's a business app, but it's basically a private Facebook group. I've got 12 guys from all around the country, from fire chief to firefighter, and we chat like schoolgirls every day on that app. That's my virtual peer support group. We call ourselves the Firehouse Kitchen Table. We talk about all our problems, marriage, family, fire department, and guess what? None of this ends up on Facebook. We don't use Facebook or Twitter as our counselor. We don't. And these guys, if you don't answer, they call you. I flew to New Jersey to go to one on birthday. I mean, this is how much these guys mean to me.
That is awesome.
And they're all out of state. They're not here.
Yeah.
They're my board of directors. They're the ones I say, hey, guys, you ever seen this before? Because I have no clue how to handle this.
And that's powerful, Andy.
They pray for us. They donate money, and they never ask for a kudos, an award, or nothing, Doctor. Yeah. They are the biblical definition of what a brother is, and I'm thankful to have them.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that. You mentioned at the beginning of this piece of it is those guiding principles in life. Mm-hmm. Where did yours come from that you have today?
I like to think that you get a lot of your guiding principles from who you're brought up with. But in the end, a lot of people you see come from broken homes and turn out amazing.
You see
people come from bad situations and turn out better than some of the most well-raised people who have every opportunity. Why is that? Because God allows everybody the same chance, no matter if you're the poor or the pastor, or, you know, the crack addict or the country club guy. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can all seek out that same value system. When I was talking about the dark side of leadership, you know what I think is hilarious? That as much as leadership is needed, if they would quit giving inspiring quotes without the background behind it, and the frustration and the fight behind it, and share more of their testimony, what they went through to be a great leader, what it cost them, the fights they fought, then you would see what did they hold on to. When you talk about values, find somebody who's been through hell and held on to their faith and held on to their family and go talk to them and say, why did you hold on? Why did you not quit? Why did you not give up? And you will find a common thread in all of them. Whether you believe as I do or not, it's a transcendent moral foundation that they said, this is the right thing to do, or is in my belief, this is what God wants for my family, my life, is everybody in that book went through absolute teetotal, you know what, frustrations, persecution, adversity. None of them walked an easy road.
Yeah.
None of them.
Yeah.
And leadership books talk about all the awesome things, and leadership is awesome. But you need to understand that there is hard times and good times. Just like you talked about ebbs and flows with balance, your EKG, if you look at your heart, has ups and downs. So does life. What you want to avoid is flatline. Okay? you don't want to be consistently flat. You're dead. So
I try to avoid that every day.
Yeah, absolutely. But the point being is those priorities came from the good Lord, and I wasn't smart enough to get them that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think 5 years of prison ministry with my church taught me more about things that I didn't realize when I went and saw what the world considered, you know, humanity's worst, locked up in prison, and these guys had a stronger faith than I did. Mm-hmm. And I said, why do they have something that I don't have? And I realized they had lost everything. Some of them hadn't had a visit in 20 years.
Wow.
And the only thing they could hold on to was either his hope or it was hopelessness. And they said, if you take away a person's hope, they're done. And I said, God, I want that kind of faith, but I don't want to go through what they went through to get it.
Yes. Yes. A couple things I want to ask you on, gosh, I got so much I want to ask you at this point. Let's keep it on faith for a second.
All right. I got coffee. I'm good.
All right. Is that in the workplace?
Mm-hmm.
It is, and in our culture of our country,
mm-hmm.
it is, I'll be nice. It's frowned upon to so-called talk about faith or to share faith, express faith.
Yes, sir.
All that kind of stuff. And how do you wrap your arms around that? Because for me, you know, I teach part-time at a Catholic university, okay. Right? And it's like, I still have to be careful. Supposed to be. Can you imagine that? Still have to be careful.
I left the previous church because I had to be careful what I said about the Bible in a church.
Yeah. So it's like, with that said, how do you balance that out to where, because you you're a man of God. It's, you express it, you show it, you try to live it. Is it more mostly about just living by, leading by example, or?
I think the term leadership, like we talked about earlier, is what you have to be careful in faith, because Jesus only asked us to do one thing.
Follow
him.
Yeah.
He didn't say follow the church. He didn't say follow the president. He didn't say follow you at your teaching. He didn't say to, you know, whichever pastor you follow on TV. He said, follow me. Everybody else picks out imperfect Christians and blames the faith, whether you're a Christian, you're a Muslim, or whatever faith you choose. They pick the abusers of that faith and judge it. And Ravi Zacharias said it best, never judge a philosophy or belief system by the small percentage you choose to abuse it, like what the world's doing to the police right now. You know, 1% of the police doing all these bad things, 99% doing good. Let's judge the whole thing. Well, that's the very definition of being prejudiced and racist.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that. In faith, in general, if I follow what I'm supposed to follow, and you said, how do I do that in a workplace because it's frowned upon? St. Francis of Assisi had a great statement, one of countless many, which is, in all things, go and preach the gospel, and if necessary, use words. So,
absolutely.
Well, so what does that mean? That means your actions, your very things that you do, should show what you believe. You know, the faith, the works and faith go together, not separate.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be doing good things. You should be giving. You should be kind to others, especially when it's hard. And when you're not, you should apologize and go to your brother or sister and make amends for it. Because trust me, if you want to know what I do more than anything, I apologize and I call people when I mess up.
Yeah.
Because I do. I can be in my house, doctor, I can be right or I can be happy. Guess which one I choose to be?
Happy.
Yeah, right. So point being is, in this world, the fact that they're trying to suppress your faith is an oxymoron, because we're founded on faith principles, but nobody wants you to share your faith because it dictates theirs. Or I can tell you can go out every day and live your faith out and never offend a person by never speaking a word. But the minute you open your mouth, you're in trouble. And I'm not allowed to evangelize or share my faith at work by words, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not supposed to endorse politics or anything. And I get that. And I respect that. But that doesn't mean I can't live out my faith by how I treat people, how I forgive people, and especially how I treat people who have wronged me.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Vengeance versus kindness. Forgiveness versus, I'm going to wish, the world's end on that person. I always, like I said earlier, I think it's a great contradiction that firefighters will die for somebody in a burning building, but we wouldn't pee on the guy from A-Shift if he was on fire. That's wrong. You don't like that guy? Why? Because, he doesn't relieve me till 8 o'clock in the morning. And well, maybe he's going through a bad marriage and he's having to get his kids to school. You ever asked why he's late? No, he's just a piece of dirt. He's sorry. He's a slug. Well, yeah. He didn't get that way overnight. You know, you can exercise your faith in this world by doing good things. Now, when you talk about speaking out, yes, you better not have a uniform on or something that can tie you to it, because then they're going to say, the chief at the Atlanta Fire Department several years ago was fired because he wrote a book called Who Told You You Were Naked? And he had quoted scripture in it, but he signed the book as the fire chief.
Hmm.
That endorsed it. And you can't endorse a particular faith from a non-secular belief system. And you shouldn't be surprised that the world goes after faith, because they don't like things that tell them what they can and can't do. If you don't believe that, look at the since February to now of our entire free country being told, you can't go out, you can't go here, you got to wear a mask. How well have we behaved? We have not, no matter what belief system you have. We act like my 10-year-old when we tell her to go do something. I told you go do that. I told you go do that. I told you the fifth time. I told you go do that. We act like children.
Yep.
But our faith should be our basis. If you build a house, the most important part is what it stands on, and it's the foundation. And I think too many people, including myself in certain points of my life, as Ravi Zacharias said, we have our feet firmly planted in midair when it comes to a foundation. We do. Our morals are something that move and change and ebb and flow. And you can't do that.
Yeah.
Because you will never know where you stand, and neither will the people who trust you. Because then they'll begin not to trust you, because they'll say, that guy is either bipolar or something's wrong with him, because this week he was this guy and this week he's this guy. He's Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
You know, you got to live out what you believe. And that doesn't mean you can't, you know, be the person you're called to be at work. Mm-hmm. You have to be respectful of your organization's rules. Don't get me wrong, but they don't have the right to infringe upon your rights, though. You know, and that's, I'll tell you, that's the biggest issue right now is apathy. Christians in general will not stand up for their beliefs when it comes to being called out for something. And everybody else will, but we won't. And I'm telling you, you can stand up without being evil, without being hateful, and the world can learn to disagree once again, agreeably. Because if you can learn to disagree without hating each other, without saying, just because I disagree with you doesn't mean you and I can't be friends. I have atheist friends. I have Muslim friends. I have all kinds of different friends and different beliefs and backgrounds because I respect their right to do so. Does that mean I agree with everything they do? No. But I can still love them, appreciate them, and respect them.
Right.
I'm not changing who I am for the sake of their beliefs. That's not just compromise. As we say at work, you're folding like a cheap lawn chair. Anytime anybody comes to you and challenges your values, you back down and cower in the corner. No.
Yeah.
You are who you are because of what you believe. So stick with it, and they'll respect you for it.
Absolutely.
Sorry. Pardon for the mini sermonette. But.
No, that's what I'm searching for. Searching for it. Love your philosophy. Very, very wise. Very wise, Chief. Very wise man. I want to shift gears a little bit and pull you right back into... Hey, folks, I'm going to pause it right there. That concludes part one of two of Chief Andy Starnes when we are talking about faith, family, and career. So be sure to listen next week. We'll catch up on part two of two. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.